I need help. Help. This is Bathrobe Spear Robert broadcasting an SOS. For the next 2 hours, we're going to need you, yes, you, to call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-3772 here at beautiful 96.3 FM. This is going to be Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides, edition 947 or thereabouts. Well, 97 maybe, I don't know, something like that. All right, Uncle Jim. Oh, yeah. We have homeless events coming up. In fact, we have homeless events every night. Actually, we have round-the-clock homeless events. Bye-bye there, folks. Well, let's swing into Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. We're going to be doing lots of interesting, mostly recorded stuff today, but we have an interview with Wonton Dave Jacobs, infamous activist absent without leave from Santa Cruz, who fought the city government to a standstill and is currently a fugitive from the city of Santa Cruz, mostly for tickets under camping ordinances. We'll be hearing from him. We're going to be hearing from Tom Osher of San Francisco, Food Not Bombs, talking about marijuana and health activist Pebbles Trippett, who continues to fight for the rights of all of us to use marijuana for our health and for our own enjoyment, a right that hundreds of thousands have been jailed for in the last couple of decades. We're going to be talking to, well, we're going to be listening to some blasts from the past, some historical lookbacks at previous fights against the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz, Ordinance 6.36. We're going to be hearing some updates from, some surprise updates. And hopefully we're also going to be hearing from you. Again, 427-3772 is the call-in. So let's get right into the...
Build high, build wide your prison wall, that there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide, that all the land be locked inside. You have seized the valiant few whose glory cast a shade on you. How can you now go home with ease, jangling your heavy dungeon keys? The birds that still insist on song, the sunlit streams still running strong, the flowers blazing red and blue, all are in contempt of you. Making breeze, then you can throw away your keys. Build high, build wide your prison wall, that there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide, that all the land be locked inside.
We don't pretend we're perfect, but we have endearing features. We're honest and we're always kind, God's four-footed creatures. Dogs and horses, hamsters, rabbits, little furry things. Lousy Europeans can't appreciate the pleasure that a little kindness brings. We're a nation of animal lovers. When Greeks were being tortured, then we always held our peace. We used to like to spend our summer holidays in Greece. Cats and ponies, butchers, moths and hairy caterpillars. Lousy Europeans can't appreciate the pleasure that these little creatures give us. We're a nation of animal lovers. When there's hangings in South Africa, we just avert our gaze. But we're tender-hearted to a fault with alley cats and strays. Remember how the nation nearly had a nervous spasm, breathlessly anticipating giant panda's pleasure in a cuddly orgasm. We're a nation of animal lovers. When there's rioting in Brixton, we're impressively impassive. But be cruel to a horse and our reaction then is massive. Guinea pigs and painted terrapin, tropical fishes. Lesser races cannot understand the simple fact that it would meet with all our wishes if there were no human beings.
And that was Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger singing songs from an album about half a decade old called White Wind, Black Tide. They are great singers and great composers, political and topical songs. Peggy Seeger, that's Pete Seeger's half-sister, and Ewan McCall, who she was lifelong partners with, had children by. He died 3 or 4 years ago. Great singers, great writers, great human beings. They were strugglers for basic human rights. Well, I'm still queuing up tapes, and I got a call from Judgment Day John Stewart, who hates to be called that. He has another name for himself, something about normal and abnormal, which no doubt he will go on about at some length if he calls in to correct me. But he reminded me that he's had a great idea, which is to have a sort of an on-air switchboard, which would allow people to call this show and say that they're headed north or south or east or west. West is a little questionable, but if you have a boat, I guess you could head west and take passengers. Of course, this used to be what was done at the Santa Cruz switchboard when there was a switchboard on the mall in the 70s. People would come to the switchboard with their problems. They could leave their backpack there. They could get medical information. They could get sometimes legal help. They could get put up a little message looking for work and or rides and so forth. I think that reviving the switchboard, well, it's always been a kind of a pet desire of mine, and I'm hoping that at some point that will re-happen. What you have now, of course, is the Homeless Community Resource Center. Instead, the whole idea of alternate lifestyle has been dumped into the basement of homelessness as some sort of charity poverty project, and oh, those poor people, keep them out of sight, keep them out of town, instead of being a community resource. Even though it's called the Homeless Community Resource Center, it's still used largely by a labeled and self-labeled population of people. Not that it's bad to have a place where you can take a shower, a place where you can wash your clothes and so forth, and certainly not. I've been advocating for that for years. But anyway, John called in and talked about possibly using radio shows, and other talk show hosts might want to do this as well, to provide people an opportunity to ask for and to offer rides. And I'm going to do that on this show this time. If you have a ride to offer in the next 3 or 4 days, give a call to this show, leave your name or a name, and then folks who need to use that can call into the radio station and present their names. Maybe you can all get together at a certain place. It sounds a little makeshift at the moment. Maybe John can propose some details as to how to actually do this, because parts of the show are going to be recorded. My show is only for 2 hours, so I'm not quite sure how it's going to work, but let's give it a try. Maybe it will work. Give a call to 427-3772 if you have a car, truck, donkey, or bicycle, preferably a bicycle built for two, heading out of town in the next few days and you want to take a passenger. And alternately, if you're looking for a ride, give a call and we can try to hook people up. And also tell your friends so that if you are part of a van that's headed in a certain direction, maybe you can make that offer. It's also true that if you're looking for a ride, one place to check out is Friendship Corner at Cathcart and Pacific, where there is a lot of, in spite of police harassment, which is on the upsurge, I found, in the last few days, police are driving people out of Ford's parking lot, even though that property has public access and police have no business telling people to leave that property. The people are being told, and I have some interviews I hope to play, that They cannot be on that property, and they'll be arrested and cited if they stay, which is, of course, preposterous. There's no nothing is posted. There are no trespass signs. It's an open thoroughfare. In spite of the attempt of Mayor Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews to fence it in and close it down, in spite of the efforts of downtown merchants to, again, proceed with their exclusionary policies downtown, that hasn't happened, and it's still open territory. So if they tell you to move, call some witnesses over, get some names and numbers, and file some complaints. That's the way to do it. We're also going to be talking in the next 2 hours about the resignation of Citizens Police Review Board Commissioner John Malkin. John was a member of the Coalition for a Civilian Police Review Board that set up this fig leaf review board in the first place, and he was really its most militant member, although he was very soft-spoken about his militance because he was constantly being attacked by the Police Officers Association, by conservatives in liberal guise, appointed by such men as Scott Kennedy. Michael Hernandez is the man on the commission, is a sort of a police ringer appointed by Scott Kennedy, who are always trying to weaken the commission, always trying to uphold the authority of the police, essentially trying to sabotage what might be the work of the commission, although the commission has essentially done no work. They have dawdled, diddled, and doodled for the last year. You know, they do ride-alongs with the police and talk-alongs, sing-alongs, and hug-alongs, but if it comes to any kind of significant confrontation, they are not there. Now, we are using the Police Review Board's policies and practices, its offices, to file complaints around blatant police abuses at the City Hall sleepout vigil. City Hall sleepout folks have been subjected to a whole variety, a catalog of different abuses, ranging from Lieutenant Habey's destruction and seizure of political signs and flyers on several occasions, to the practice of seizing blankets as, quote, evidence of the crime of sleep. You don't need that as evidence. You take a picture. It's obviously an attempt to punish people and to make them less likely to engage in this form of political protest because they're going to freeze their butts off at night. I think Robert Flory has had blankets stolen. Well, he had one stolen again last night when they issued three more tickets, and there'll be a report from Dan Hopkins, Dragon's Heart Dan, as I call him, later in the show. Police have been engaged in all kinds of abuses, including putting people in jail on infraction tickets. It's not legal to put someone in jail on an infraction ticket, but tell that to Sergeant Clark. Doesn't seem to do any good. That's Kicker Clark, famous for his footish approach to homeless people in the late 80s. The man who reportedly drew a gun on a skateboarder in front of the old bookshop Santa Cruz in 1988 and said to him, "Down on your knees and say your prayers." That's Sergeant Joe Clark, who is frequently on the night shift arresting people for the crime of sleeping in front of City Hall. So the Police Review Board is going to be something we're going to be talking about. It's been in the news, particularly yesterday, in the Sentinel and in the Mercury News. Police Review Board has a meeting on Monday at 5 o'clock at City Hall, which is open to everybody. And I would say it might be worthwhile to go to the board and tell them exactly what you think of them for their total lack of support for John Malkin and their constant butt-kissing for the police department, which I have gone on about at length on this show, ranging from rubber-stamping the police chief Belcher's opportunistic change of police policies to justify his covering up of and misreporting of and inappropriate procedures around complaints last summer, where the police department was actually arguing people out of making complaints, turning them into so-called inquiries that they now declare the Police Review Board has no control over. The Police Review Board's response to this is to diddle, dawdle, and doodle. They held a meeting on Wednesday, which I didn't get to, concerning what they should do about the latest list of police policies, which the police department, knowing how powerless the board is, didn't even give the board the courtesy to look at before they shoved them right into the board and the public's face in these new policies, which allow the police department to simply just not report things to the Citizens Police Review Board by classifying them as inquiries, classifying so-called complaints as inquiries, or encouraging people to make inquiries. A lot of this is Scott Kennedy's doing. Kennedy proposed a weakened board and delayed the board for years, running it around proposals about mediation that even his pals in the police department don't support or are using to sabotage the board. So it's a sad situation, but one that we have to confront, because the real place to confront police abuse in our community is not at a bureaucratic board, although I do suggest people file complaints, and I filed one myself 3 days ago. Filed six, in fact, all against Sergeant Seeley, Sergeant Eric. Who's got the cocaine in the death chamber? Seeley. You may remember Sergeant Seeley has been sued. I should say a claim has been put in against the city for his raiding, rushing into a house where a person was dead of AIDS, the body was lying there in state, the widow was in the back, shouting, "Where's the cocaine?" Throwing back the coverings of the poor emaciated corpse and taking pictures while telling everybody not to move. That's the same Eric Seeley who is abusive toward homeless demonstrators at the peace vigil. Not physically abusive, no. He simply abuses them in a more subtle, more insidious way that is less likely to be able to be called. I mean, we are trying to call him on it, but it's not easy to get any kind of a hearing, even, of course, when people are abusive. We had a couple that one woman claimed she was beaten about the face by a flashlight. She's an alcoholic person, and that has to be taken into consideration in considering her testimony. But when I talked to her a week ago, and I played her testimony again on tape, her most recent report, this is of an incident that happened in early March, and she accuses Lieutenant Habe and Sergeant Vogel of doing this. They said they were sleeping across from the City Hall sleepout, right near the Civic Auditorium or around the corner from the fire station thereabouts. And she got hit with a flashlight in the face, and you can see about her eyes, there's a, not bruising, but scarring that wasn't there before. She did a videotaped inquiry, a videotaped account of what happened, and don't see Mike Rotkin rushing out to discipline or talk about the issue to suggest that there be some concern about Lieutenant Habe or Sergeant Vogel's behavior here. After all, these are just homeless people, and the homeless people can be perhaps dumped up in the state parks if you can find a place for them up there. If you can't, or if enough of them don't have the money to go up there, which seems to be one of the problems, and that was in the paper this morning as well, that there's a real shortage of people using the Barb River Woman Sherry Connable voucher program, which in a way is a shame. You know, I was almost moved. I've been critical of that program repeatedly because I think it's a fig leaf thing, and I think it's getting all kinds of attention it shouldn't be getting. But frankly, I think it's good for people to have access to the state parks, and I think that the more accessibility for people, for decent places to sleep, the better. I just commented how hypocritical it was for the city to be pointing its finger at the bigots in the state park system when it's the one that's dumping people out of town, and it has its own anti-homeless camping ban. Yeah. Well, let's go up to a couple of interviews from a week or two ago, kind of putting our finger on the pulse of the outdoor scene here in Santa Cruz. Yeah, I'm talking to... What's your first name?
Brian.
And Brian, how long have you been sleeping illegally?
About 21 years, off and on.
Wow, heaven's sakes. And how old are you?
43.
And so how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
6 months.
And what has happened during that time? Why haven't you gotten a job and aren't renting an apartment?
Well, I am working casual labor from the lumber company.
And how often do you get work there?
It's right now it's starting to pick up, but it's been real slow all winter. Hardly, you know, last 3 weeks it's been really not happening at all.
And what sort of a place do you sleep when you sleep at night? Not giving any particular location.
Basically, I find a place that's dry, away from the road, and, you know,
I mean, you look pretty
quiet.
Well dressed. Your clothes are clean. You got shoes on. You're clean shaven. Look good. How do you manage this?
The River Street Shelter up there.
It's you mean the Homeless Community Resource Center?
Whatever they call it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you do this alone, or are you sleeping with someone?
I sleep most of the time alone, then once in a while, you know.
You get lucky.
Yeah, I'd rather sleep alone, though, because I'm a loner, basically.
Have you considered sleeping at this sleep out and risking a ticket?
I've thought about it, but I can't afford a ticket right now. So it's a real dilemma. I don't know. I might not.
If you stay awake, you won't get a ticket. You realize that. So you could be here as a witness if you want.
I didn't realize that, no.
Oh, yeah. You can be awake, provided you haven't got your bedding laid out and provided you're not asleep. Wouldn't you agree with that, Dan?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. Your support is important because if you even just come by and say hi and speak with us for a few minutes, a lot of times somebody might buy some coffee for us, you know, and we'll be able to share coffee with you or whatever, or a little bit of food. We don't have much food right now, but we try to share what we have, you know. And if you can come by, you know, for a few minutes even, or an hour, or something like that, and just sit around and talk with us. Sometimes people bring guitars and talk, and we talk about all these issues that we all know about, you know, and we have people that we can identify here, you know. I mean, identify with, you know, so it's really neat.
So, yeah, so you're invited, of course, to come and go and whoop it up and...
walking around.
Were you one of the people that let go out of the armory? Were you one of the people that was released from the armory? Or?
I never stayed there.
Why didn't you choose to use those magnificent armory facilities?
Because, well, I don't want to comment. I'd rather be alone because some of the people are kind of out there and some are.
You found it more difficult to sleep in that environment with everybody close to you?
Yeah, well, I don't like being bussed up. They're like cattle. So I said no. You know, I'd rather sleep out under a tree or something. You know.
You're one of the renegades and rebels that Mayor Rotkin talks about, eh?
Oh. You might say that. I'm up from North Berkeley Way.
I see.
And I've been through scenes up there with People's Park or whatever. So.
Really? Yeah. Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say for our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience?
Hey, Bob, you made it back, huh?
Just hello, and I guess we can all use the support. All is homeless. That's it. I don't know.
Thank you. John, is it?
Brian.
Brian. Sorry, Brian. Thanks, Brian.
And that was about a week or two ago at the City Hall Sleepout, which is at 809 Center Street, for all you folks who've been sleeping through this entire process. Yesterday, we went out to the Homeless Community Resource Center, we being me and my tape recorder, for the first time, in weeks. Saw Barb Riverwoman and her friends in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless with their van rounding up people to go off to, I should say signing up people, to go off to the State Park program. Didn't get a chance to talk to her. Hopefully we will at some point. And if she's listening in that unlikely event, she is welcome to call in, as is Sherry Connable, who I guess yesterday had conferences with the state park officials and Henry Mello, who's the state senator. I heard a brief report on that thing from Crossroads' Chris Brosda, a homeless activist and somewhat controversial figure and at the homeless movement, who's does a lot of writing on the email and the news groups on the internet. And Chris, if you're listening and you have more information to report on that, feel free to give a call with an update on what's been happening. What we've got now, however, as I said, is a brief report from the homeless community resource scene last night. It's a very scaled-down scene after 5 o'clock. I guess the meal is over. Folks are getting ready to... They've taken off for the scaled-down interfaith satellite shelter program, which is down to... I guess it's less than 52 beds. It's going to cut back even further at the end of April. And that's mostly for, I guess, women and families and disabled people. There's also the River Street Mini Shelter nearby, which has 36 beds. And, of course, there's Barbara's program, which is loading up at the same place. But really, a lot less people. There were 20 or 30 people there yesterday when I showed up. And one of them was this person. Talking to
Ramona Porter.
The Ramona Porter from past interviews, and it's about 5:10, 5:15 out here at the shelter, actually in front of the Homeless Community Resource Center, where some folks are waiting to go to the campground, some to go to the ISSP church program, but not you. You're waiting to go
to the River Street shelter.
And how long have you been there now?
Well, almost a month.
And how is it treating you?
They're treating me good.
So you have to be in at a certain time at the River Street Mini Shelter?
Mm-hmm. At about 5.
If you want to go out for a movie,
six.
Can you get permission to go out?
Yes, you can.
So theoretically, now what if you want to go out and get laid? How can you do that? I mean, theoretically. So if you want to spend the night out, you can't do that? Or?
Well, you can spend the night out. We don't, you know, particularly say that, and I'm a Christian.
No.
I don't believe in that.
You don't?
No.
Well, I know some Christians who believe in that. But if you want to be out for the night and do an adult activity, let's say, you just simply get permission, or?
You have to get 24-hour notice in order to get a whole night out for a month. Every month you can do that. that.
Now, I talked to a fellow who had a problem at the River Street Shelter within the last 2 weeks. There's a black guy, the bald head, tall guy. Did you meet this guy by any chance? Did you know him? Tall black guy with an earring, I think he had. His name was Miguel.
It doesn't sound familiar at all.
Just wondered if you'd heard about him. He apparently got ousted from the shelter, and he was concerned because the reasons he felt were not good. But how long now, how many times have you been in the shelter, let's say, for the last year?
Myself, probably about 2 to 3.
And is it difficult getting in, or is there much of a waiting list?
It's not real difficult. You just go over underneath where the patio is, and you can be there anywhere from 4 to 6 o'clock p.m. in the afternoons, and ask if there's any bed available, and ask if you can get on the waiting list if you need to.
Now, this is a month at a time you get in, right? Or is it
right.
A night at a time? It's a month at a time.
Right.
And
30-day shelter, and emergency basis, that could be about 1 or 2 nights.
You've done both the 30-day and the emergency?
Just the 30 days.
And so you're almost reaching the end of your 30-day period. Can you do another 30-day period?
It's possible, next month.
Are you shooting for another,
actually, I'd like to get a permanent kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And
so you're hoping for some real housing.
Right.
What about the campground program that Barb Riverwoman has been running out of here? Have you had any reports on that or know anything about that?
No. I've been seeing a lot of smiley faces. They seem to be, they got what they wanted, and I'm really happy about that. That's what it seems like. And apparently, from what I've read in the paper, though, it's creating national chaos.
Well, creating some grumbles from a number of bigots. My main concern about the program is it isn't due enough. It's only 60 spots at most, and you also got to round up 10 bucks from somewhere for the week, for some people it's difficult to do.
Yeah, it's difficult for me because I have a lot of different kinds of things that I do, a lot of different jobs, weekend job, but I'm doing all kinds of different things, and I really don't have enough work. I'm trying to get more work.
Well, come on free radio any time and advertise your job situation. And is there any way people can, in fact, employ you? Any suggestions as to how they can reach you, what kind of work you're looking for?
Well, I do aid work. I also do sales kind of work, and I like to do artwork. And they can reach me at 423-6397, extension number 5236.
Okay, and run that number by one more time.
423-6397, and then the voicemail mailbox number 5236.
All right, so for anybody listening out there who has some potential work for Ramona, do give her a call. Leave a message on her machine, and she'll get back to you. Anything further you want to say?
Well, if they want to call me at the River Street Shelter, that's 425-9824.
And either of these places, they can offer you, give you job offers.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah, they can reach me at the latter number in the evenings. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
So do call in if you have some work offers for Ramona. People are in need of work, particularly people without shelter. They can use the money even more than the rest of us. Well, let's have a brief newspaper break here. I'm going to read you a story from yesterday's Mercury News. I don't know whether you were following it in the Sentinel, which also had a story the same day. This is the story of police critic quits panel, namely John Malkin, the man I was talking about earlier. Santa Cruz watchdog board called timid, story by John Woolfolk. And I'm reading this mainly for the information of folks who want to follow this but for some reason don't get the Mercury News but may have access to the Sentinel. And I don't know how likely this is. Haven't really got a sampling. I don't really know what the hell goes on with the audience out there because I don't know about you guys. But here's the audience calling, and maybe you can tell me.
Hello?
Try again, caller. We lost our phone connection there. It slips out every so often. While we're waiting, I'll begin this story by John Woolfolk. A member of Santa Cruz's Police Oversight Board has resigned in frustration with what he says is a watchdog agency afraid to bark for fear of upsetting the police. John Malkin, an early advocate of police oversight, often criticized as overly adversarial, explained his resignation from the volunteer post in a four-page letter dated March 29th. That's a letter I haven't heard yet, or I haven't read yet. He contends the city's seven-member Citizens Police Review Board, set up 2 years ago to oversee citizen complaints against police, has avoided criticizing them over complaints and procedures. I strongly disagree with the persistent method of some board members to refrain from inquiring about or making public critical issues because of the possibility of a defensive response from the police department, Malkin wrote. As a result, some concerns have been dropped or handled so as to draw minimum or no public attention. Malkin also filed a complaint of his own against the police, alleging former Police Officers Association president Steve Clark tried to intimidate him with an investigation into his background. The complaint stems from an August 30th meeting among Malkin, Clark, and Review Board Chairwoman Kay Bowden over a letter Clark wrote that said Malkin, quote, entertains fantasies about the police department covering up complaints. At the private meeting, Clark allegedly told Malkin he was gathering information about him. The fact that my political beliefs are under investigation by a police officer is Orwellian and is a violation of my civil rights, Malkin said in his complaint. Clark and Bowden were unavailable for comment. Andy Crane, vice president of the Police Officers Association, said he had no knowledge of any investigation of Malkin. Malkin wrote his undergraduate thesis at the University of California, Santa Cruz, on the movement to establish a Police Review Commission in Santa Cruz as a community studies student in 1992. But he has been broadly criticized by police council members, fellow review board members, and community activists as being antagonistic and anti-authority. You know, it's interesting. That's the kind of statement you often read in attacks on me, on Robert Norse in the newspaper. But the one thing that such attacks don't include are specifics. And in this case, we'd have no specific criticisms of John Malkin that are in this article. Councilmember Scott Kennedy, a key player in establishing the review board 2 years ago after 4 years of bitter community debate, had lobbied to keep Malkin off the panel because of his views. I had some problems with his impartiality, Kennedy said, adding that he considered Malkin's thesis unfair and said it misquoted him. That's new to me. Community activist Eric Larson of the Resource Center for Nonviolence rebuked Malkin in a letter to the mayor last month. The letter concerned Malkin's comments after a meeting in which he and Police Chief Steve Belcher explained complaint procedures to residents. Larson said Malkin's comments were inappropriate and helped drive a wedge between the community and the police. Malkin was nominated by Councilwoman Celia Scott, who said Wednesday that she was saddened by his resignation. Scott said the review board had been doing a good job for the most part. Boy, is she without a clue. But added, I do share some of the concerns he expressed. She would not comment on Malkin's complaint against Clark. Again, notice that in Eric Larson's letter to Mayor Rotkin, which I did get a copy of and I talked to Malkin about briefly, has no specifics. It doesn't specifically state the comments that it claims Malkin made that Larson regarded as a wedge between the police and the community. The purpose of the Citizens Police Review Board is to facilitate complaints against the police department, where individuals have felt that in the past they cannot get a fair and impartial hearing from individuals inside the police department itself, and they don't have the money to hire an attorney and go to court. Hence, a Citizens Police Review Board. An adversarial board, not a board that's supposed to be in bed with Chief Belcher, not a board concerned with pandering to the sensibilities of the chief, not the PR department of the police. No, this is a board that's supposed to be our board, which concerns itself with complaints against the police department and making those complaints public and helping people who have those complaints to bring them up in spite of the fears they have that there will be reprisals, that they will be ignored, that they will face subsequent discrimination, and so forth. We lost the best person on the board. Not that it made any difference, because the board wasn't doing anything anyway. However, it is significant, most significant, that John is no longer there. just as I talked to you a couple weeks ago about how the board had no support for him in the face of unsubstantiated and vague charges by Kennedy's pet snitch, Eric Larson, of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, who has been doing his own sort of drum-up support for the police program in the community neighborhoods, again, as part of the drug war plan, kind of the mini-drug war in Santa Cruz. The board would not support Malkin, even though Larson had no specifics. I don't like Larson. He tried to strong-arm me a year and a half ago, and I've discussed that before on this program, I believe. I don't like Scott Kennedy, because I think he's a hypocrite. Gandhian advocates who pass anti-homeless laws are not Gandhian advocates and should bill themselves more accurately. Hang on.
Do you have a phone call, and you are on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. It's Xavier.
Hi, Xavier.
Really concerned about that, John Malkin resigning. Do you know if he has any other plans for doing something outside of the system?
No, actually, John has never been terribly close to me, and he initially thought I was some sort of provocateur or spy or something. He's very close to Margaret Marr, who has had me in disfavor since 1990. Marr and I used to be pretty close, but there were problems around political organizing that happened that summer. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. John doesn't confide in me. He has called back in response to my calls, but I think that's been more because he's had a public position and felt that he had to as a basis of that position. I don't know if he would make that choice as an individual who is no longer a member of the Police Review Board, but you can call him. In fact, I can give you his phone number if you want to reach him, and I'll give it out over the air because I think he deserves the support of people who are listening, that at least to say that you had the courage to call the shots on this one.
Yeah.
And his number, for anyone who's interested, is 429-9088. That's 429-9088.
Okay. I was trying to... one of the first pieces of political activism I got involved in, I think, was a few years ago. We were trying to get some kind of thing like this started.
Police Review Board?
Yeah, and it was Cop Watch and a few other things. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that what if we were to, people who are interested, just circumvent the entire city system and just take it upon ourselves to have print up forms similar to the ones that the Police Review Commission has and distribute them and have them be delivered to our group, and we put in a database the police officer involved, what they did, and tabulate all that information.
I think that's an excellent idea. In fact, there's currently an organization which in a rudimentary form does that, headed by Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, and it's called SPAN, Stop
yeah.
Police Abuse Now.
Yeah.
And the number to call if you want to involve yourself with that is 475-2012, 475-2012. And in Berkeley, Berkeley established a police review board, probably the most powerful police review board of its kind back in the 70s, which was quickly truncated by a court decision. The original Berkeley Police Review Board allowed for disciplinary powers, which no police review board anywhere in the country had, and no police review board has at this time. And the courts decided that that required a change in the city charter, and that hadn't been voted and so forth, and so it was cut off. But the board still has the independent investigator provision, it has public hearings required, and it's completely independent of the police department. So even though it's hobbled by the city manager up there, who's the police department's pal, and has been the police department's pal for years, it still is the strongest board that I know of around. But even those folks up in Berkeley realized that the Police Review Board wasn't doing it, and they started Cop Watch in 1989 mm-hmm. in Berkeley, which, of course, is a group that goes around with video cameras and scanners, as we did here in Santa Cruz for a period of time. I guess Bob Duran was doing it. I don't know if you were doing it. Kim Argula was doing it. I was doing it. Cop Watch formed, I guess, in 1992 after the response to the Rodney King verdicts, that is to say the... Kuhn and the other officers who were acquitted by the Simi Valley jury when we had the huge demonstration here in town.
Yeah, and of course, recently, I think it was in Riverside, they cops beat up some more.
Oh yeah, that's hit the front pages. Yeah.
I wanted to. Do you know what the I was involved in Cop Watch a little bit, kind of on a when I was down here kind of basis. And recently I tried calling the IWW line, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of motors going by.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, it's no longer a number. Do you know if there's any activity going on as far as Cop Watch in Santa Cruz?
Cop Watch actually, there's several Cop Watch organizations formed. One I formed with a woman named Susie Lark in 1992, and Susie's still around. She's a dog groomer, but she's probably kind of, the organization's probably been inactive. And I'll give you her number off air at some point if you want to call me. Bob Duran was the main man behind Cop Watch here in town. You should probably contact him and talk to him about it.
Okay. Yeah, I think this might be a time to get some coalition building happening.
Definitely. We actually proposed in the summer of 1990 a tribunal, a people's tribunal, mm-hmm. that would meet with, you know, would consider complaints. It would appoint a people's counsel for the police officer if the police officer declined to show, and would allow for a public airing of complaints and concerns, and then make a recommendation. It would be kind of an impromptu court.
Uh-huh.
And that, Robert Lee was involved with that, if you know Robert Lee.
Yeah.
That was quickly sabotaged by the brouhaha around the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep and Margaret Marr and Sherry Connable and all that sort of stuff, which split the homeless movement in the summer of 1990.
Yeah.
But we came off the high of the 1990 Homeless Day Independence celebration here, where we had hundreds of people who came from different cities to support the rights of the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, of course, the 8.5-month homeless vigil at the post office, which was going on at that time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to get involved and take a call from these phone numbers you just gave me.
Okay.
And, I'll be listening.
Sure.
Thanks.
All right. If anybody's interested, maybe they should. You want to give your number so they can contact you or not?
Let's see. Probably not. I can.
If anybody's interested in contacting Xavier with assistance for a Cop Watch project, give me a call at 423-HUFF. 423-4833.
That's a good way of doing it. Great.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, twice a week, Civil Rights for the Poor, from 10 to noon. Call-in number here at the studio if you want to talk live is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC. So, continuing with some quick shots, here's a brief, I don't want to call it a report, but it is a report from Dan Hopkins from about a week ago. We have a much more recent report from this morning, which we're going to play a bit later. But here's a sort of an update on the River Street refugees who were cited as recently as yesterday. I understand Michael Sheridan is back in town, Rolling Thunder Michael. If he's listening to this program, I encourage him to either come into the studio with his latest piercing and incisive update. Ooh, it could be him on the phone now. Let's see who that is.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so who's this Bob Dobbs guy that's head of Cop Watch?
Bob Dobbs.
Bob Dobbs.
Dobbs?
He from the Church of the Bob?
Church of
person?
Bob, I would say it's a church. Actually, I think we're thinking of Bob Duran, Skidmark Bob, sometimes known as. Or as I used to call him, Cop Watch Bob.
Yeah.
And in
yeah.
fact, that's you, isn't it?
What? That's me. Yeah, I was up in the helicopter when they were beating that woman down there in Riverside.
Catching snapshots,
taking those pictures. Yeah, that was me.
Well, tell us what did happen to Cop Watch here in Santa Cruz, Bob?
Well, not enough people were getting involved in it, and I think it turned more into something where, well, which is the dream that I have, is that people would just become more informed with their rights and be able to stop and be more concerned about their community rather than on their way to Starbucks coffee for their quick fix,
mm-hmm.
and stop and watch what the police are doing to people and be an observer and take down badge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it should be a group that does it. I think that concerned individuals should do it. And it would be good to have a base area where people can bring all these complaints, because obviously the police isn't doing their job. If they can hold on to Sean for 6 days on an infraction and then let him go without even a court date, I think that's a little bit illegal myself.
I would have to agree with you. In fact, we're kind of cataloging a whole bunch of abuses, which allegedly civil liberties attorney Margaret Marr and the American Civil Liberties Union will hopefully be looking into.
Yeah.
Of course, the ACLU has not been too active in our area, particularly around homeless rights issues.
They're pretty dead as far as I'm concerned.
I'm
here.
Afraid
they,
so.
They show up for a Citizens Police Review Board meeting now and then they twiddle their thumbs, get bored, and leave. And as far as I'm concerned, ACLU is not really doing anything. Anything.
What do you think of the Malkin resignation?
He split, huh? I heard something to do with Gary Larson crying and whining because...
Eric Larson.
Right.
Yeah. Gary Larson is the cartoonist. Eric Larson is the snitch in the beach flat.
Well, I think that's pretty messed up because that was the only person on the group that was doing anything. He wanted to make posters and get more people involved because I made some... recommendations to the police review board that maybe they should like get the word out more that there's complaints, maybe put on little workshops or put at least some posters around town telling people they can complain about whatever's going on with the police, and then they totally knocked that one down for them. And then Eric Larson here complains about it, and of course our favorite sergeant what the hell is his name?
Joe Clark,
yeah, who mysteriously grew back some hair on his head. I noticed he was bald the last time I saw him back in May 11th, and now I think that minoxidil's kicking in and getting some roots going there.
Either that or he's got a toupee maker with Carol Boozenhart out there in the valley or something.
So anyway, he accused him of being anti-authoritarian or anti-police because of something he wrote when he was in high school or something, and he brought it out, pulled it out of his bag of tricks one day and told him that. I was behind closed doors and no public meeting. But I heard that at one of the CPRB meetings,
mm-hmm.
brought up by the union rep. But police have to be watched. I live down in the lower beach flats area, and there's always stuff going on here. I just sometimes have to stick my head out the window and see what's going on.
What's your reading on Eric Larson? Eric has been getting a lot of publicity recently for, I guess, stuff around gang violence and then suing landlords who allow, I don't know, people to cluster outside who sell drugs or some such thing.
Well, he's not. I mean, he's helping facilitate that, but he's not actually the ones doing it. The citizens of Lower Ocean are the people that are doing it. He's just taking credit for it, I think. And he walks around handing out flyers when their meetings are and stuff. So basically what they're doing is they're suing their landlords for not fixing things around the property, which I think is an excellent idea.
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
But they're taking landlords to civil court, suing them. They've won a few cases already.
But aren't they also, isn't this kind of wrapped up in the drug war thing, too?
I think it had to do, over off of Barson and Clay, Barson Street down there where the one-way traffic is, where you can come through and buy drugs anytime you want, and there's nobody there now. They did a bunch of busts and raids, and of course the Santa Cruz or County Sheriff's gang patrol, gang unit had some big hand in all that. They made all these busts. They busted some bar down the street that was selling drugs too, and this and that. And the drug war played a big, big hand in this. And but I think it was mainly the citizens of Lower Ocean. I think just their organization. I think it's a good thing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of the few things that Resource Center for Nonviolence that does, it's, any good at all, is taking care of their own neighborhood. And I think I commend them on that. And
Eric for helping?
Well, I don't know what he does, I mean, I see him walking around with papers under his, he won't talk to me. He won't even come over to where I live in Lower Ocean and let me know when there's a meeting. I remember I used to live the other place, and I saw him next door talking to somebody, telling him about the Lower Ocean meeting, and he totally disregarded my house because he knew I lived there. He didn't want to come up and let me know where there was a meeting because he didn't want any anarchists or so-called anarchists get involved in organizing some of the neighbors around here. He had issues with Kim Argula. Kim Argula had issues with him and some of the organizing they tried to joint organizing they tried to do. Leaving Food Not Bombs out of the whole picture is what he did most of the time.
Well, you wouldn't want disreputable groups like that being given any media.
Poisonous Blossom, and they were passed by the city council within 2 months after that, making it illegal for people to sit down 10 feet from a shop on the sidewalk, ask for spare change after dark, and so forth. You actually been on the mall recently, Jim. You and I were together on the mall, I guess last Friday or Saturday, doing a table at the, maybe a week ago Friday or Saturday.
At the Cinema 9,
regaling passers-by with the importance of dealing with the sleeping ban law, and you were again out there yesterday.
Yeah, I was out there yesterday, and I'm actually, I'm really fairly excited that there are people who are beginning to take a look at what's happening in America and are taking a look at what's developing in this community. And there are quite a few people out on the street who do really care about humanity. And I had good conversation with people about these issues yesterday. Now, what I want to say to people, if you're listening and you have any inkling of morality or any inkling of compassion or any inkling of political understanding or any care for the human race, I want to encourage you to take a deep look, examine what the fascists or the people, the rulers of America, what they're implementing in this country. Because if you think things have been bad for black people or indigenous people or women or workers or homeless people or immigrants, if you think things have been bad up until this point, what they're about to do to us is getting so far severe that the rate that they're building prisons, at the rate that they're putting us in prisons, and here's a fact, over 570 black people every day in America get locked up behind bars daily. That is escalating. There is a serious war that the government and the system is waging upon the people. It is time to get involved and resist and educate and inform ourselves and get everybody that we can possibly get to be made aware to stand up, because together we can change the whole world.
Now, are you going to be doing this table on a regular basis?
The Revolutionary Coalition will be trying to do tabling as much as possible. I will be part of that process. We want to encourage other people to be part of that process. So please get hooked up with other groups who are tabling and are educating. And if you can get hooked up with the Revolutionary Coalition and you want to deal with the politics that are really going to make change in this world, then please get hooked up.
Now, again, your number is
421-9250.
You can also get hooked up with the somewhat mellower but still exciting HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUF, appropriately enough. My goodness.
He's a poet.
So, Jim, is there more you want to add up before we turn to the Keith McHenry Report, which will kill the last half hour of this show?
I want to say one last thing, is that I want everybody to know, if you're out there listening, I want you all to know that the rights that you have today as a human being in America, which they're very limited, but those rights that we do have, they have come about because of the people before us who have struggled, who have cared about us, because of the Black Panthers, because of the Black Liberation Army, because of people like Frederick Douglass, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, because of all the civil rights activists, all the anti-war demonstrators, all the workers' struggles, every single right that we have, the fact that women get to vote, the fact that has come about a result of militant struggle. And this is what we have to understand, that if we want change in the world, it's going to take militant struggle. The judge is not going to change. The rulers of this country aren't going to wake up and just kick down freedom. The court systems, the police, the DAs, none of that. They all work to oppress us. The laws are to uphold the capitalists and keep us all down. So if you understand that, then you understand the need for a revolutionary process, for a process that gets involved the masses of this country, the masses of the planet, organized and united around a fundamental program for human rights for all people, and dealing with the obstacles that are in the way to deal specifically with what are the steps, what do we as oppressed people need to do and are willing to do on this planet to ensure that we will survive world capitalism.
And there you have it. An incoming call. Perhaps this will be a moment for us here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, good morning. Hi.
That sounds like Bob LaMonica.
Yeah, hi there, Robert, and hi, Jim.
Hello,
I want to bring up the obstacle of the Santa Cruz Action Network.
SCAN.
You bet. SCAN is a front true political change in this town. And I agree with Mr. Kosser, nothing happens without a challenge. And these kinds of procedural facades are going to continue in our face until enough people stand up. The only thing that people have going for them is numbers. All right, and the Santa Cruz Action Network, with its labels of being progressive and liberal, is probably one of the most powerful obstacles to true social change in this community. And I think it's been exhibited in the case of poor people's rights, the homeless issue, with abuse of power across the board. And one last thing. This Citizens Police Review Board is a dead letter office. Internal Affairs at the Sheriff's Department is a dead letter office. These are all procedural facades. And until people wake up and realize that goon squads are part of history and part of the present, there will always be enough goons to oppress. The only thing that's going to change this is that people become politicized and empowered and recognize their participatory role, and that there can be a rising tide, and then things will change. We'll see remarkable change.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. All right, see you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that was Bob, and we lost Jim, and we're back on our lonesome here and Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Phone lines are open, and what we're going to do now is play the Keith McHenry Report, which is Keith McHenry of San Francisco, Food Not Bombs activist, giving us a kind of a broad and yet a very specific series of observations and bits of news that kind of keep us hopping and jumping and snapping for more. But you can always call in during this if you want to talk, 427-3772.
April 1st, 1996, a phone call to Keith McHenry.
Hello, Keith McHenry up in San Francisco.
Yes, how's it going?
Well, not bad. And what's cooking with you? I understand you just spent the weekend in Fresno dilly-dallying with other California Food Not Bombers.
Yeah, that was very nice. They had a great space that we were at, it was probably about like 40, 50 people at the height were there. People from Bakersfield, people from down in Santa Cruz and San Francisco, East Bay, Fresno, and a scattering of other organizations.
Now, when we last spoke, you were concerned about sort of renewed harassment of Food Not Bombs in different locations, New York City, Arcata, I guess, San Francisco even. Any general consensus on what's going on? Has there been much new harassment that you found out about over the weekend?
The one thing was that on the Saturday meal at Whittier, the police came, and they were prepared to be arrested yesterday, and I haven't gotten news yet as to whether they were arrested or not, but they were planning on being arrested.
Whittier is the hometown of the former President Nixon.
Right, right.
Down in Southern California on the coast.
Yes, yeah, so, and they couldn't show to the gathering because of this suppression. And we did have an agenda item and talked about mutual aid and encouraged chapters to go to Whittier possibly even next week to get arrested, particularly the Southern California chapters, to try to support their efforts. And there hasn't been, like in San Francisco, we haven't had any more hassles. And there hasn't been any hassles. That one day where there was jacking people up in the Bronx, that hasn't happened again. The Manhattan group hasn't been harassed again, to my knowledge.
What about Arcata?
And Arcata is a continual photographing of them and documenting their activities. But no, and the trial is on hold because for the five people that are facing civil contempt, they have a bunch of different mistakes that the government has made there. For instance, there's the one woman who they saw serving, they wrote down her wrong name. They called her Robin, and she was actually a different woman, and she's now actually lives in Salt Lake City. So she's been away now for months, so the city government is confused as to who this person actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, the judge there ended up having, he served food as well without a permit to the public during Christmas. So they are waiting to find out if they're going to get another judge from another county to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still pending. And it looks like they're looking at Lodi, interestingly enough, for a judge. There's a judge there that was very successful in San Francisco in the Robert Norris Kahn case.
Yeah.
I thought might be a good judge to have up in
Judge Barkley.
Yes, Mr. Barkley. That is one of the potential judges that can go over to Humboldt County and find those people guilty. So.
I see. Well, those judges get around, don't they?
Yeah, he's a Jack Kevorkian of food distribution judges. So.
I see. And I guess Arcata has been continuing to serve food in spite of all this?
Yeah, they serve in the regular schedule, and all those things are continuing. In fact, it looks like there's an expansion where there's a Eureka may start up. So that's very exciting.
How many Food Not Bombs have you got now in California?
Let's see, we have Arcata, Balinas, Santa Rosa, San Francisco, East Bay, Sacramento, Santa Cruz, Paltas. Santa Day's sort of on the blink right now. Well, hopefully that'll start up again with this new radio.
Palo Alto?
Yeah, Palo Alto. Then down in Southern California, it's getting way too confusing for me. I know there's a Venice, California. There was a... I just received information about another group serving in, I think, Costa Mesa again has started up, and San Bernardino, Bakersfield, Fresno is very active. Bakersfield and Fresno are very active, and San Bernardino, actually. San Diego, again, has started back up. Long Beach, which is the third oldest chapter in the United States, is still cranking every week, and... So quite a number of chapters in California. We're pretty, you know, dispersed throughout the state. And, you know, we run into a couple of different obvious problems with the way that the current society is organized. It's very hard for most chapters serve on Sunday. So to hold a gathering in the weekend is difficult because it hurts the ability to serve locally.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that distances in the state are huge. You know, for somebody to get from Arcata to Fresno, that's like a 12-hour drive. And
did they come down?
Unfortunately, they couldn't make it. It was just such a distance. And
We're back with you, Keith.
Yes.
What's happening in dear old San Francisco? We see a story in the Morning Chronicle that talks about Jordan criticizes Mayor Brown for essentially... allowing people to sleep in the parks and then not allowing people to sleep in the parks, and or allowing people to sleep and then not allowing people to sleep. What? Any new information on the plight of the homeless in San Francisco?
Yeah, there's two different disturbing trends that are happening. First of all, the due to police-coordinated citizen pressure, Fred Lau announced last Wednesday that there would be stepped-up patrols in Golden Gate Park. So that's a real drag, since there's been this alleged indication that there would be no more of that happening. But so it seems like the right wing is still in power in San Francisco. So that's what's happening anyway. So to put more cops in Golden Gate Park on top of already the increased repression and arrests of homeless people in Golden Gate Park is just outrageous. Also, listeners may be aware of the fact that the citizens of San Francisco voted against a sitting ban law that would make it a criminal offense to sit on the sidewalk in commercial districts. Now, the police have figured out a way to get around that. They actually have been arresting people anyway for sitting on the sidewalk, particularly in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. There's been for several years now, it's been a big problem of police harassment, and even though people still do sit on the sidewalk, but they're jacked up all the time. So now there's a no-tolerance issue being forced on. There's a way that the police department, two Wednesdays ago at the police commission, came up with this strategy that they could use some police codes and alter them slightly so that they could be used to harass homeless people and people sitting on the sidewalk even more. So they're...
Do you know what code they altered?
I'm not sure of the number, but there's a... and I did actually save the article, so I can report in more detail about that.
Any comments by the supervisors who supposedly opposed the sitting ban?
No. Well, this is the outrageous thing, is the Board of Supervisors are essentially disappeared for all intents and purposes. I attended the one supervisors meeting where they meet every Monday and they'll be meeting today, but no one shows up in their chambers. They're a rubber stamp for the Brown administration. They're completely not independent, with the exception of Sue Bierman has been independent. She voted against the new helicopters that the Department of Defense has given to the police department here in San Francisco. And after unfortunately Tom Amiano had voted for the helicopters, he had his second thoughts, and he even called me at home to say he was, like, after I spoke in public comment, that he was reconsidering the issue. So I don't know if that's going to be brought back up or not, but he did make an amendment that the helicopters could only be for 1 year, and then they'd have to be brought back up again, but which was adopted by the rest of the Board of Supervisors. But I think he may realize now that it should be done away with altogether, that there certainly should not be these 10-hour flyovers that they're planned for our community.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're interrupting this morning report from Keith McHenry in San Francisco on the San Francisco Food Not Bombs political scene to talk to our own political scene here in Santa Cruz. It's Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. Hi, Dan.
Morning. How are you?
And Dan, you've been apparently schmoozing with the court, hanging out in the courtroom anyway, at the trial of David Dumars, I should say the sentencing hearing. We just had Jim Costner in the studio, who told us that there had been a 45-day sentence on David Dumars for criminal slogan writing on a Sentinel box. Actually, it's protesting the rights of the homeless downtown. I think it was really is more fittingly the criminal charge, because that's what he really was doing in the course of all this. But you apparently have an update for us on what happened after that.
Right. Come in. Somehow or another, he changed it to a 45-day sentence and said that the reason he was being sentenced, you know, for straight time was because he refused to do the probation because he knew he'd be a target for from the Santa Cruz Police Department, you know, because we're, as he referred to it, we're in a fishbowl here. We're not like in New York, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all the cops know everybody, and they can watch every move you make, and they can just get you because they want to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very strongly that he was right about that, and due to my experience with the police. But anyway, so then an interesting thing happened was he went over to the jail because he had to stay until next month for the 45-day sentence.
Mm-hmm.
When he got there, they told him that he's only going to have to serve 26 days of community service in Fort.
Wow.
So that was, everybody was happy, you know, that was there, you know, like, lawyer and a lady friend of his, you know, and another lady friend.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really, really happy that it was only turned out to be 26 days of community service. I guess it was in direct opposition of what the judge had ordered. You know, I don't know how exactly they do that, but...
That's the judge did some sneaky number and made it look like he was the hard guy and you let somebody else be the soft guy or something. So what does that 26 days of community service mean? He has 26 days of jail time, or...?
No, community service, working in the community.
Working in the community.
Yeah, volunteer work.
I mean, normally you get hours of community service, not days, so it's it's a strange kind of thing. Maybe we'll understand that more later. You are Dan, the famous Dan Hopkins, who stays up all night and sleeps all day, and... You apparently have been arrested a number of times at the City Hall sleepout, now going into day 32, is it?
Yeah, it's day 32, can you believe it?
And you had an arrest last night and a ticket. You want to tell us about that?
Well, there was a girl arrested. Her name is Sandy. She's been a really reliable supporter who just comes in specifically to get arrested.
You know, she was arrested for assaulting an officer, breaking a window, something like that?
No, for the terrible crime of sleeping.
Sleeping, I see. Arrested for sleeping, okay.
And an interesting thing happened with her case.
Mm-hmm.
Was after she came back this morning, we looked at her ticket, and it was for an infraction.
Uh-huh.
She was arrested and taken to jail.
Yeah, they're doing that now regularly. In fact, Sean Alamy, who called the show this morning and has been in jail all weekend, was arrested on two infraction tickets, the
right.
Same kinds of tickets that apparently Sandy got and was released on.
Yeah, and... one of our people was trying to help us. He called up on that particular case you're talking about, and they can't even tell us when Sean's going to court. They don't know if it's not even scheduled or anything, which is exactly what they did the last week, you know. And so we can't, and we couldn't use this one legal way of getting him out that a lawyer gave us, you know, to get him out because he was being illegally held in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't use that paper because the bailiff wouldn't give it to the judge.
you talking about the attorney?
Robert
Flory.
Robert Flory.
I didn't think he'd be receiving callers till Wednesday, but it's interesting if he can get in early. That would be quite something.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he is also the man who got a ticket last night, right?
Yes, he is. He got a ticket, and so did Jimmy, too.
So there were actually two tickets and one and one arrest, huh?
And then they doubled back again, and I think they gave two more tickets. What they did is they doubled back 45 minutes later.
Aha.
And I think they gave two more tickets, if I remember right.
And who did those two tickets go to?
That I'm not sure of, because I was on the phone with you earlier this morning, you know?
So when you talked to me on the phone, you said that one ticket had been given to Robert Flory.
Right.
Was it then that they came back and gave a ticket to Jimmy Riley, or?
Actually, I think Jimmy got on the first fight. I think Ben might have gotten one, and I can't remember who the other person was.
So it actually sounds like a total of four tickets and one arrest, huh?
Yeah, right. That sounds pretty much.
So you're racking up a good box score there, Dan.
Yeah, we've got so the listeners can hear what's going on with this ridiculous sleeping bag. I think we're somewhere right at about 55 camping tickets.
And maybe a total of 70 tickets and arrests?
Yeah, 70 charges, yeah, because all of us have gotten extra charges tacked on, you know. Ridiculous charges over resisting arrest, and we didn't really put up a struggle or anything like that, you know.
Well, I want to thank you, Dan. Anything you want to add? We're getting to the closing minutes of the show.
There is one thing I'd like to add.
Mm-hmm.
If your listeners can support us, we found out today that we're probably going to be getting a lot of support from other organizations. You know, in Portland, we met a lot of people that were there.
Right.
They are definitely wanting to support us. They're wanting to go out of their way to support us. However, your listeners are the most important people to us right now. And if they can come and support us in some way down at 809 Center, City Hall, and right across from the Santa Cruz Library, one block away from Sentinel. And if they can come and support us in some way, we're not asking you to get arrested or get in trouble or anything. However, if you want to, that's fine too. We love you for that. And, we love you anyway, and if you know, if they can come down, and some people bring us coffee, some people bring us food, you know, because we need it on a daily basis, because this is like a 24-hour job, 7 days a week, and day 32. So we need all different types of people from all different kinds of organizations to help us, and I feel it coming together. The energy is starting to build now, and that's what we need. We need a lot of numbers. When we start going into the hundreds of people protesting, we'll have to do something here in Santa Cruz about this cool and unusual law. Anyway, okay then, Robert, we'll see you later.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, bye.
Keep it up.
Yeah, thank you.
Free Radio Santa Cruz is about to pass on the mic to the next talk show host. If you want to be on my show, all you have to do is show up at Taco Bell at Pacific and Laurel Streets at the Taco Bell there at 9:45 on Friday. That's when the next show will be happening. Or you can give me a call at home at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or come on down to the City Hall Sleepout, as Dan Hopkins was talking about, at 809 Center Street, right across from the library. Any time of the day or night, they can use your help. Just if it's only a kind word, that helps as well. We're going to go out on the last part of the Keith McHenry interview, and then we'll be catching the Sly and the next talk show hosts, and they will be able to pick you up from there.
So Matrix arrests are up in January and February of this year to 1,700 arrests in those 2 months. And the January and February of the year before, under Frank Jordan, the arrests were for Matrix crimes were 1,200. And that would be two crimes. 647I, which is intent to lodge, meaning if you're caught with a sleeping bag or backpack, a shopping cart, a suitcase or something like that, then you would be you can be arrested for that. Or the sleeping, which is technically speaking at night, you're not allowed to sleep in the parks, although that law has been enforced even outside of the time restraints. So that's been increasing. Then we went to a meeting with the mayor's office was sponsored by the Council on Homelessness last week. I think I may have been on my way to that when I last reported in.
You reported to me that there was a big summit brouhaha that included no homeless people, and we talked about that at some length.
Yeah, that was a very frightening thing, and there's also, I've talked since then to religious witness with homeless people, particular Father Vitali, and they are very bummed out that they had this huge amount of time that they spent with the mayor's homeless coordinator, for his name Ocean or something like that, or who is wearing, just like the homeless coordinators of past, they seem to wear the most expensive suits, which is a very odd thing.
So Willie Brown is notorious for his
What I don't understand is the administration does, I mean, all the other heads of departments in the mayor's office wear really crappy suits. It's just like some reason the mayor's homeless coordinator.
Well, I don't want to be mistaken for homeless people.
Yeah, I guess there's something, because the last guy was the same way under the Jordan administration. He was like the most fancily dressed up person, and even that the woman that they had, Eleanor Jacobs, she was like, would wear like $2,000 suits. They want to make sure of that.
Are you maintaining contact with the Coalition on Homelessness much? Are you much in touch with them? I know you used to work for them.
I've been talking with them a lot, and they've actually had two people involved in these negotiations with the mayor's office who have now thrown up their hands, and they're attending this meeting tomorrow night at the Artist Television Access about what to do about police repression, the increase of police repression under the new Liberal mayor. This is just as what we saw on a national level, a Liberal president get elected, and the most right-wing crime bills and anti-terrorism bills and vicious cuts in health care and education and welfare are you know, that couldn't ever pass under Bush and under Reagan. They became instant laws under the Clinton administration. We're seeing that here with the Brown administration, where there's a lot of talk about liberal this, liberal that, and the actions on the street are as draconian as possible. And it's there's a real division. You could see at that summit that the people that were pro Brown were flipping out that there was opposition to his trip, and we're going to see that with this new election for the coming up for the president of the United States. San Francisco is viciously the Democratic Party is viciously pro Clinton, and so when you see the left be this far to the right and be attempting to move it's like to be expected, actually. It's completely to be expected.
You talked about
what we've been saying for years.
You talked about the anti-terrorism bill. Where is that standing right now? And you were talking to me about this is the federal bill, but it will, of course, have implications for everyone, even locally. You pointed out to me that the bill had been weakened in committee in terms of, I think they removed the section which cut habeas corpus protections.
And they got rid of the list of activist groups, and the Clinton administration is very angry about that. And
do we have any updates on what's happening with that bill?
Right now, there's an attempt to what happens after the House votes for it and the Senate votes for it is then there's a joint House and Senate subcommittee, which then takes reworks it, and then it becomes signed into law by the president. And so there is concern, since the president has so vocally demanded that habeas corpus limitations be put into place and that this list be created, there is concern. There's a bit of concern around this, and it looks as though, for instance, the Freeman's standoff in Montana, which is happening now, that's an obviously U.S. government manipulated event. Of course, the Freeman were just sitting there for whomever they are, and it's unclear who they are exactly, because we're getting mainstream reports, generally speaking. At least that's what I've been seeing, unfortunately. And so it looks like that the U.S. government decided to go after some supposedly militia type people, jack them up, take people in for non-payment of taxes, and try to encourage a standoff, which is now happening, so that by the anniversary of the Oklahoma bombing, April 19th, there'll be a clear and present danger still occurring. It won't be in the past. It'll be something that's actually happening in Montana as we speak. And therefore,
so it's a pretext for passing the anti-terrorism
right,
bill.
Right, and for putting back into the anti-terrorism bill the lists. And of course, the militia will supposedly be on the list. I would not doubt that. And in fact, I've been kind of shocked that many people in the militia movement that I spoke to around here didn't think that this kind of thing would happen. But some have obviously been aware of that. And then also, but I should point out that after the Oklahoma bombing, Food Not Bombs members across the United States were jacked up by local police.
Really?
In association with that. And I did an interview shortly after the Oklahoma bombing with people from the Alameda County Militia, who reported that the militia movement was not jacked up at all, that they had not heard of any reports of a Michigan militia or Arizona militia or the California militia or anything getting jacked up by the police in the wake of the Oklahoma bombing, but Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, Food Not Bombs in Southern California, the Dallas Food Not Bombs were all harassed. In fact, the FBI confiscated the Fort Worth, Texas Food Not Bombs and all of their property, and it was taken by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Has it been returned?
And it has not yet been returned. And this is because of somehow the Oklahoma bombing. Now, Food Not Bombs has obviously not got anything to do with the Oklahoma bombing, but it would not surprise me if this list comes back.
Well, maybe there's a grammatical problem in the FBI office, and I think it's bombs, not food. You know,
it's just a really crazy thing. They were using that as a pretext to harass us in front of the Social Security Administration building in San Francisco, saying that, you know, they couldn't trust our food near the building. You know, what do they think? We're fermenting, you know, bagels or something?
There you go, explosive bagels.
It's like an insane thing. So, typical of these kind of things, you know, a lot of people are talking Pomerades again, you know, it sounds like was reminded at the Fresno, California-wide Food Not Bombs gathering. Some of the people from the IWW reminded us, the Industrial Workers of the World, that it was a liberal Democrat, that very progressive people who got into power and then did the Palmer Raids. You know?
Oh yeah, that's the Wilson regime.
Yeah, right.
Back in the end of World War One.
Right, and they were just so fantastic, and they were the Clintons of their time. And sure enough, there was a big disaster. So
not to mention World War One. Of course.
Yeah, of course, which is a very nice thing. And Hearst still got their papers here, still, you know, jerking people around with some misinformation.
Well, you know, down here in Santa Cruz, we have the sleep out at City Hall, which is now going into its 32nd day.
Right.
And I wonder, have you had much heard much support for this, or heard of any similar vigils where people are demanding the right to sleep? I know that we do hear of crackdowns. For example, there's a new law in Santa Clara County which makes it illegal to hold up a sign and ask for money on a freeway or near a roadway.
Because that's outrageous, since Santa Clara County is essentially nothing but a bunch of roadways that in no real other, you know, everything else is privately owned.
Well, I thought it kind of amusing, because I thought that, you know, the big concern, according to the papers, was all the traffic difficulties that they were having with all these homeless people standing on the freeways. And so I naturally scanned the newspapers for stats on the number of deaths and injuries that had happened in the last 2 years from all these hobos with signs. And, you know, I couldn't find one for some reason, but apparently they thought it was Fish and Menace in order to make it illegal for you to hold up a sign saying, "We'll work for food," you know?
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, just a class, you know, classism, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of bunk. And also, this idea that the economy is doing really well and everything is going great, and yet there's all these people that are hanging around with signs, and is outrageous. There, you know,
seems that people
with immigrant bashing, which is another great thing. And in Fresno, for instance, when we were there, they were like, had to lay off all these teachers because they lost federal funding for the education. There was a strike happening at the raisin factory about in another week, and part of the problem was that the raisin factory was going to move to Mexico, and then they started up street vigilante groups there. But the police was all excited about these new street vigilante groups they started. So, you know, what's the deal, you know? It's pretty obvious.
Have you been in touch with the Palo Alto Food Nut Bombs?
I have talked to them a bit, actually. They have moved their location away from City Hall to a plaza where there's more people walking by. What they found out was that the Palo Alto city government, those people just go in an elevator to the garage and get in their, you know, Jaguars and stuff and split. Nobody walks by them. And you know, the government does not want to be to interact with the citizens. That would be a real shame.
The Palo Alto Food Nut Bombs has gotten the okay from both the police department and from the health department. You don't need a permit in California to share free food, according to the Palo Alto or the San Mateo Health Department.
Correct, yeah, which I think is obvious, but it's nice.
Rarely stated by public officials.
Yeah.
So those Palo Alto folks you're telling me are a spunky group?
They are a spunky group of food ladlers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they've gotten a lot of very positive news. And new developments in the Food Nut Bombs world, there's Melbourne, Australia, was serving at the last critical mass, Melbourne Food Nut Bombs, so we're waiting to get information on that address. And people called recently from down in El Paso, where they've been sharing food in El Paso, Texas. And so that's exciting. That's a very intensely...
What about the Chechnya Food Nut Bombs?
That is about to start, I think. There is definitely talk of, well, Poland, there's been some people there that have been trying to get a Food Nut Bomb started. And there's people in Spain that have been interested. There's several German chapters that have started up. So it is starting to become more of a global phenomenon, mm-hmm. as McDonald's and the other U.S.-based transnational corporations start taking over the entire world.
People, what about your Singapore Food Nut Bombs?
I don't know of a Singapore. I do know of a, there's a man in Sri Lanka who's been doing Food Nut Bombs there. Kind of interesting environment with the Tamil Tigers and so on. And there's a man in Kenya that's been doing Food Nut Bombs there, and apparently redirecting AID food to people in need.
And in South America?
In South America, I'm not clear of any groups. I know there's an organization called Popeye in Mexico, and they share free vegetarian food on the streets. And there's another organization in Belize who has been sharing free vegetarian food in Belize City. And
but nothing south of the equator, eh?
Not in this hemisphere that I'm conscious of. Although there's no way to tell. There's been a number of Food Nut Bombs people that have been visiting down there, and they're all over Central and South America. So it's unclear. There may be, in fact, a Santiago Food Nut Bombs and a Lima Food Nut Bombs, but I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just impossible to tell, really, at this point. But, you know, we have a lot of groups in Canada. We have almost every major city of Canada has a... I think every major city in Canada has a chapter that's active. And they've been involved in supporting strikes and so on there. There's a effort to have a general strike in all of the province of Ontario. And so that's pretty cool. They've had some large, like Hamilton had a large general strike for 2 days in February, and there was one in London, and there's a London Food Nut Bombs and a Toronto Food Nut Bombs. So they seem to have been interested in supporting those strikes. So that's pretty amazing. And
quite an international cosmopolitan group you are.
It's quite a funny thing.
How about Reykjavik Food Nut Bombs?
We certainly need that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more groups in France. We don't have any. We have Quebecer Food Nut Bombs, Quebec City, and potentially there is a crossover there. And
well, I'm going to cross over to the radio station and leave you dangling on the phone line here, unless you have something you want to conclude.
Well, I think that we do need to organize a revolution as soon as humanly possible, because
will San Francisco?
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Will San Francisco Food Nut Bombs be coming down to support the City Hall sleep out in Santa Cruz?
We hope so. What is the best next time?
Well, actually, you could choose your time, because
it's an everyday event.
It's an everyday and every night event. They're right now huddling under the eaves as the rain comes pouring down.
Wow.
There was one arrest last night, and
I saw Robert Flores he was given many tickets that he's received.
He was given another ticket last night.